Hi again, this is Bob Patterson, publisher of Street Photography Magazine, and welcome to the Featured Photographer interview for August 2019. And with me today, as usual, is our editor, Ashley Hunsberger. So how's it going, Ashley?
Going good.
Yeah, so we're talking in the middle of the summer. And are you getting those big Florida storms and lightning strikes now?
Oh yeah, definitely. I actually saw a lightning hit the ground yesterday.
Really?
I've never seen one make contact, but it was in our backyard, and I saw it.
Ooh.
So that's my exciting story for the last week.
Wow, that's scary. I hope you got a picture.
No, but I'll send you one Juan got that's amazing. It has, he was taking a picture. There was a bird in a river and a rainbow. And as he took the picture, a lightning struck. And
really?
It's an amazing picture. Yes.
Oh, I want to see it. I definitely want to see it. Hopefully it was a double rainbow.
It literally was, but you can only see one rainbow in the picture.
You've never seen the double rainbow video?
No.
Oh, it was like one of the highest rated videos on YouTube for a long time. It was this guy who was bombed out of his mind. California guy. And he sees this double rainbow, and he's just carrying on about it. And I won't do my imitation of him. It's hilarious. Okay, anyway, we're getting off topic. This month, our feature photographer, we were very fortunate to have, is Julia Dean, photojournalist and the founder, director, you'll tell me in a second, Julia, of the Los Angeles Center for Photography, the LACP, which has spawned so many fabulous photographers, I can't even count. So, Julia, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
You've done so many things in your life and your career. I wonder if you can just tell us more about your background, how you got into photography, into photojournalism, and how'd you come up with the LACP? Just what got you to this point?
A lot of years. I started taking pictures in fifth grade when my parents gave me a camera, and I've never stopped since. And in high school, I took a lot of pictures of all my friends and events. And in college, I declared my major journalism because I found out I could take a photography class by doing so. And then eventually, I ran out of photography classes at the University of Nebraska, so I applied to RIT in Rochester, New York, and to Brooks in Santa Barbara, California, because back then in the mid-70s, it was the only two photography schools that I knew of, and I got accepted at RIT first, so I went east instead of west, and my life unfolded.
That's so exciting. I might be cutting in on the story, but I think this fits here at this moment. I read that Bernice Abbott was your mentor. Was that during your time at RIT?
It was after. When I went to school in Rochester, that I was there in 1976. I was there for 2 years. I had already gotten a lot of my college credits at the University of Nebraska prior to that, so I only needed to be at RIT for 2 years. And the last few months of being there, it's a long, fun story, but the short side of the story is that I found out that Bernice Abbott needed an apprentice, and I went after it and amazingly got it. Then I kept it quiet for months, though I felt like I had the biggest coup at the photography school. I didn't tell anybody because I was afraid that I would jinx it. And so at the last minute, I told my history of photography teacher, who was the one that actually, you know, taught me who Bernice Abbott was. And he was beside himself with, you know, happiness over this opportunity for me. And so he highly suggested that I keep a journal, you know, not just a 22-year-old journal, but a journal about my time with her and what she says and what she teaches me. And so I did. And 30 years later, I pulled it out, pulled all the pictures together from the time and put a book together called The Last Apprentice, being me. She was 80 at the time, and I was 23.
Wow.
And I was with her for a year. I lived in her home for a year. She had two homes. I lived in this big three-story home where the dark room was and the library, and it was right on a river in a little tiny town of about 50 people. It's right on the Appalachian Trail, so we saw a lot of hikers go by. She lived a couple miles down the road right on a lake in a little A-frame. And so we worked in the home. Yeah, it was really something. And so she basically what she hired me to do was print, which is funny because I look back on what I showed her and to try to get the apprenticeship. And I realized I wasn't a very good printer back then, but I think she liked the little Nebraska girl that I was, and she thought she'd give me a chance. And so she did, and it was great. And I learned how to print really well.
Wow. Can you just, for everybody listening, tell us a little bit about Bernice Abbott's background? Because I know when I read that on your website, I didn't know who that was. And I looked her up, and I was like, wow, this was an amazing apprenticeship.
Yeah, she was a real pioneer. She was born in 1898. And she lived to be 93. So she had a good long life. But she went to Paris in her early 20s and in the 20s. And she was there for a decade, and she met everybody, you know, all the expats, and she photographed them all. But she was working for, she found a job as an assistant to photographer Man Ray. And she thought at that time she wanted to be a sculptor, but then she was so good in the darkroom. She was such a good apprentice to him that he suggested that she start taking pictures and lent her some of his equipment. So she started doing portraits too. And then they eventually became kind of competitors because they were both doing portraits of everybody in town. And she was noted as being, you know, if you were, I got to get this quote right. I don't think I can, but she was really popular as a portrait photographer. All the expats in Paris, James Joyce, Edna St. Vincent Millay, Peggy Guggenheim, and all the folks that were living in Paris at the time. Hemingway. She's got pictures of all of them. She has pictures of Eugene Ache too. And when he died, he was old and she was young. And she was went to the family and said, "If you'll give me his photographs, I'll do right by him." And so the reason we know who he is because of her. You'll never read his name without the mention of her name, because she's the one that, you know, saved his work from obscurity, I guess, probably. There's a biography that came out about her a couple of years ago. It's about 600 and some pages. And I was delighted to find my name on 7 pages in there, unbeknownst to me. I didn't, you know, so I was just evidently the writer of the book, who I now have since met. She found a copy of The Last Apprentice on the website, because I had put it on the website. And so she quoted my journals in her book. It was fun. I was so excited to see my name in Bernice Abbott's biography.
Wow. Yeah,
what a thrill.
It was. It would have been a thrill to know that it was going to be there, but I didn't know. I had no idea. I opened the book.
Surprise.
Yeah, what a pleasant surprise.
Exactly.
You say you worked mostly printing with Bernice. Do you feel like your time with her affected your photography?
Oh, in every way, yes. I mean, I was 23 years old, 22 when I first arrived, I think, or 23, I can't remember. And she, you know, she was 80. She was a tough woman, and she was not necessarily easy on me. But I decided that I was, while I was her apprentice, I wasn't going to cry ever, and I wasn't going to get defensive, because she knew a lot more than I did. So we got along really well. She liked me a lot, even though she was hard on me sometimes. And I liked her a lot, too. So whenever she'd go away for a while, I'd always find things to do. So she'd come back, and I'd have organized, you know, 350 glass plates, and maybe I contact printed all of them. I did that once. So she was always happy that I could do things without her around. But what we would do in the dark room is she would come to the house, and I'd have it all set up. And then eventually this didn't happen in the beginning, 'cause she had to teach me how to print really well. But after a while, when I was better at it, I would work for a few hours in the morning getting the print almost perfect. and then she'd come in and we would finesse it. And it often took, because these are 8x10 negatives that we were working with in an 8x10 and larger, and it would often take all four of our hands to be burning and dodging and dropping tools and picking one up. And, you know, it was a highly concentrated situation printing her work. Hmm. And I in my book, I have like diagrams of how we printed things and what got burned and dodged. And I have lots of quotes from her about all the people she knew in the 20s. And I was a Nebraska girl who had gone to Rochester, New York. So I was kind of a small town Nebraska girl who had been in Rochester for a couple of years. And so when I went to be with Bernice, she was this kind of worldly woman, and she taught me a lot. And I spent a lot of time in her library. I'd never had a library before like that. And so I learned a lot about everything, art, people. And I wasn't just learning about, you know, James Joyce in a book. I was learning about him because she met him.
Yeah.
So that was all wonderful. And so I learned stories about everybody that she photographed. She taught me how to dance the Charleston once. It was fun. She bought me wine every once in a while. It was
what an amazing experience. Now I want to read your book that you wrote.
And then I'll send you a copy. Then, but she, after I left, I was there for a year. She lived for another 13 years. So I got to, you know, still get to see her and be friendly rather than just to have that 1 year experience. So she lived to be 91.
Wow.
So what about your career as a journalist?
Well, it's funny because when I studied journalism at the University of Nebraska, it wasn't because I was interested in journalism. It was only because I wanted to take photography classes.
Oh.
But it was later that I became interested in journalism. And eventually I went back after I graduated from RIT. Then I went, a year went by, and then I went back and got my master's degree in journalism. And I did that because I wanted to learn how to write properly as a journalist. So following those years, there was about a decade that I spent traveling around the world working for nonprofits and relief agencies and religious newspapers and that kind of thing. I barely made a living. I probably made $10,000 or $15,000 a year for 10 years, but I got all around the world, and I felt like I was doing some substantial work, you know, making a little bit of difference, my pictures. And so I did that for a number of years. But when I came to LA then, in 1994, it was too expensive to pay rent and go away for a few months at a time. So then once I started my school, which was then called the Julia Dean Photo Workshops, mm-hmm. I was working 100 hours a week and I had no time to go anywhere. So my socially concerned work kind of came to an end as far as my travels back then when I decided to build the school. So I had to make a choice.
Yeah, that's tough. It's so tough it's hard to do multiple things. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, when I was a college teacher, I was a college teacher for 16 years before I came to LA to start my school. Well, that's not why I came to LA. I just came to LA and then I started my school. But when you're a college teacher, you've got the summer off and you've got a month off at Christmas, but you also still have some money coming in. So it was a good way for me to get around the world because I could, you know, I could make a little bit of money as a teacher and then still have some time off. But then, you know, coming here, when I was working, you know, full time on the LACP, then there's no time to go anywhere. And that was the problem.
It's interesting that you say, I know I got to talk to you about the LACP last month. But it's interesting you say your like socially concerned work kind of came to an end when you started the school. But I feel like the LACP is kind of turning into a socially concerned what should I call it? Like institute.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say that because I'm one of the things that I haven't told. I didn't talk to you actually about the last time we spoke is for several years I was raising money through a different fiscal sponsor. We are now the Los Angeles Center of Photography as a nonprofit, but when I was the Julia Dean Photo Workshops, we were not a nonprofit. And so I had a fiscal sponsor in San Francisco called the Tide Center. And so money went through them to us. And I was raising money to do stories on child laborers around the world. And I'd hired a bunch of photographers to do this. And as I raised the money, I sent them out, and we got 6 photographers out around the world to do that. So that was what I was doing while I was running my school. So I was still working on socially concerned stuff, just as the director of the project versus the photographer. So now that we're really established after 20 years at LACP, and we're a nonprofit, and we're our own fiscal sponsor, I want to start doing those kinds of stories again collaboratively with other photographers. I'll probably be the director, and I'll probably hire photographers, but I have one very big story in mind that's so important right now, and that's the homelessness of LA. So that's I'm hoping to be able to do a collaborative project through LACP, and that will be the extra thing I add on to LACP, other than everything else we're already doing, is this whole aspect of working on collaborative socially concerned stories of our in our city or our state or our country for that matter, but one at a time.
That's exciting though, and I feel like it's that aspect of what you do has never really left you. Because I was even thinking about the Boys and Girls Club program that you came up with. Even that, to me, feels like something that's really going to help the community and the kids.
Well, yes, I certainly hope so. We had a big exhibit on Saturday of the program, and there we had 127 photographs up by 100 kids, and we had at least a couple hundred people come for the opening, and a lot of kids and families, and it was so much fun, and they were just thrilled about it, and everybody was. I had a big grin on my face all day long, and and it's just been a big dream of mine to. This is why we went nonprofit at LACP, so that we could do these programs for underserved kids, and these. I wanted specifically to do it at Boys and Girls Clubs because they have a classroom. They already have the kids. We can just come to them and make it easy, rather than trying to get them to us. And so last year it's a long story, but it's a good ending. We got a $218,000 grant from an anonymous, well, we know who they are, but anonymous family foundation to implement our program into 10 Boys and Girls Clubs. And so that exhibit this Saturday was the result of their first 7 months of being in the program, 10 clubs, 100 kids.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, yeah, to be able to raise that kind of money is so difficult.
Well, it was. We just got lucky as could be, because the story is that one of our board of directors, he really believed in what I wanted to do. And when he lays his money down, he knows it's serious. And he gave us an extra $8,000 to hire this man who's a very successful grant writer. And he's the one that got us the grant. And, you know, we've never gotten anywhere close to that before. So that was just amazing. And it just all went to this wonderful project. And you could really see the effect on Saturday. It was the first time that everybody's been together like that, you know, all the clubs and all the kids. And so we plan to do that every year. And the program will go on into perpetuity. You know, we have enough money for their first year, and then we give them everything. We give them all the cameras and the computer and the projector, and then they keep, and we give them all the support of hiring teachers for, you know, forever. But they need to come up with the money for, we're going to try to help them raise it, but they're responsible for paying for the teacher's salary the second year and on. But they all know that when they applied for the program. And so the programs will continue to go on year after year.
It just seems like such an exciting program. Just looking at some of the pictures you sent us, and we published a few in the article about the LACP. The kids just look so like involved, and like they're really having a good time doing street photography. And then their pictures were amazing. Yeah, I mean, it just seems like such a successful project.
Well, the teachers are really good. The teachers are doing a really good job.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you do something like that, I mean, you never know what kind of spark you're going to create in the mind of one of these young people and what they're going to do in the future.
So I heard somebody at the exhibit on Saturday came up and told me they heard a little kid say to her mom, is this what it's like to be famous? Because people were asking her all about her photograph, and she was telling them all about her photograph. And so that's neat, because now they know that by being a creative person, they can get attention for it, you know, and they can show work and people ask about it. And one other kid wanted to know if he could make a living at it. And I mean, wow, you know, those are the kinds of things that change people's lives. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't happen until you do it. I mean, just sending people money or writing about them doesn't make a difference, but being part of their life and actually teaching them things is huge.
It's pretty exciting.
Now, speaking of teaching, I've seen so much work from people who have learned from you, and it's amazing. You must be a magician or something. How do you bring this out of people?
I think looking at talented people, they just came to me talented already.
Yeah, well, that helps. But still, what's your secret sauce?
Well,
find good people, right?
I've been lucky to meet so many talented photographers along the way. And one of the things that I always tell new students, young or old, you know, basic photography students, is the beauty of photography is that you can learn to become a good photographer, where unfortunately I wasn't born with a good voice. I will never be a singer, but I wasn't necessarily a very good photographer either for quite some time. And then, you know, you get better. And that's the beauty, is that you can become good at photography if you study and you shoot a lot and you look at a lot of people's work and you pay attention. And that really is the probably the beauty of photography, is that anybody can do it if they set their minds to it. But they have to practice just like you do anything else.
Yeah, just like music.
Yes, it is.
So you've trained so many people over the years. I mean, I know it's hard to choose someone, but who should, out of that group, who should we be paying attention to? Or who do you recommend we take a look at? I know you can't name everybody.
Well, I'll tell you who you already probably know. He's been on 60 Minutes twice already. His name is Joel Sartori, and he was in the second class I ever taught in 1982. He's a National Geographic photographer. He's working on a project called the Photo Ark, and he's photographing all species in captivity in the world, and there's about 15,000. It's going to take him about 30 years. He's already done it for 15 years.
Wow.
So he's getting a lot of attention for this project. So he's my most famous student. And he was 19 at the time that we met, and I was 27. And that's when I started teaching at the University of Nebraska. And then the second accomplished photographer is Al Shaben, who works for the LA Times and has for 25 years now. Those are the two that are, I mean, there's so many that from my university days, my college days, that are doing well. From LACP, everybody in my collective group has talent, and they're all, they should all be looked at. And we have a website that's LA Street Collective and .com, and you can look at everybody's work. We're kind of in the process right now of changing up a few things, so it'll look really great in about a month, but you can still look at the work. It looks good.
I think it looks good now.
Yeah, it does look good. It's just that we're changing up our best, adding some more best pictures and, you know, doing some swap around, so.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Since this is Street Photography Magazine, and everybody's interested in street photography, what can you tell us about your collective and why it exists in the first place?
Well, that's a great question. I in 2010, for about a decade, I started the Julie Dean Photo Workshops in 1999. And all my travels, as I mentioned earlier, had come to a close because of starting my school. And I was missing being on the road. So for a decade, I took people on 25 travel workshops around the world. that was my fix to, you know, travel. But it wasn't the same kind of travel as what I, you know, what I was used to as far as socially concerned stories and everything. It was fun. It was street photography and it was great. But, so when I came home though, the last time I thought, God, I only get to shoot four times a year. And that's when I came up with the project of, well, geez, I'm shooting on the streets of everywhere around the world. Why not in my own city here in Los Angeles, for goodness sakes? So that's when that started. It was in 2010. And I've been shooting on the streets of all over L.A., but mostly my location that I love the most is downtown L.A. I moved downtown in 2011 just so I could be close to my project. So that's how I started my street photography. Soon thereafter, I started my first street photography class. I think I just called it street photography. I can't remember. And five people signed up. So that's been, I guess, about 9 years ago. And then we had a street. So then I started calling it Street 1 because I added a Street 2. And then we just changed Street 2 into Street Collective. And now what it is, you can't just sign up. You have to keep taking Street 1. We call it on the streets in L.A. now. But you have to keep taking that class or shoot on your own to get good enough stuff to apply to for the collective. So right now there's about 17 people who have been accepted into collective. And then from the past, and then everybody else applies to get in. And so that way we keep it a very serious group. I came up with a new idea recently that I'm all excited about, because for years we've been photographing all these same spots all over LA. And not that that's bad, that's good, because it's always good to try to get a better shot. Even if you think you got the best shot in the world in the fashion district, you can always get a better one, right? So that's been good, but this time I decided to do something different. And what I also wanted to mention is, one of the things that creates the seriousness in this group is that not only are we just having some fun and getting some exercise and going out and improving our photography, but we really feel the camaraderie of the fact that we are documenting our city. And in 10 years, we will have quite a documentation of our city, and 20 years, and depends on how many, you know, how long we go. But that gives it more of a mission than just a street photography class. And I think that's what you were talking about, Ashley, as far as the kind of social aspect behind it. You know, we're documenting our city.
Well, yeah, I mean, you guys are going to have an archive that's amazing.
It is already pretty extensive, but I it'll be something to be able to, like, go, okay, here's 10 years worth of stuff. But
yeah,
in May, I offered a street photography workshop in New York, and it was in a different type of thing. Rather than going to all the usual places that you might go to shoot, like Times Square or whatever, I decided to walk the length of Broadway instead. So once I found out that Broadway actually went all the way from bottom to top, it was 13 miles, right? So it actually it's 33 miles. It actually goes through the Bronx too, but it's 13 miles in Manhattan. So I thought, okay, that's doable. We can do that in 5 days. In the meantime, I did it myself, but I did it over about three trips to New York. So I knew the walk, but so then when I got there in May, we all did it in 5 days, but I walked in 5 days, 34.9 miles. And it was great to hike in 5 days. We did just basically 7 miles a day. But it was a wonderful, different approach to street shooting in New York. And so then I came back and I went, I need to do this in LA too. I need to mix it up for street collectors. So we haven't decided which street, if it's going to be Wilshire Boulevard or if it's going to be Pico Boulevard. But both of them start downtown and go to the beach. So, and they go through lots of different neighborhoods. So, that's what we're going to do in our next season. Our next season starts next month. And that's what we're going to do, is we're going to document one street for the next 6 months.
Wow. That's exciting. That reminds me of something I read, I think, on your website, where I think you mentioned that Bernice Abbott told you that a photographer always has to have a personal project to work on. And I feel like that's a theme with you. Like, you always have is about every semester having a project and completing it. And there's always projects. So why do you think having a personal project is so important? What difference does it make?
Well, you know, that's probably the one of the most important things she taught me, I think, out of the many things she taught me, because she always used to say, or maybe I say this, I can't remember now. when you wake up from bed in the morning and you actually have a day off, you can't wait to go work on your project. She used to say, if you wake up and you have to go work on your project and you dread it, you've got the wrong project. You know, so she always talked about it. And my friend Hank O'Neill, who is in his late 70s now, back then he was in his late 30s when I met him, but he is her biographer, and he too talks about how important projects are and how important what she told him. And he works on projects constantly. And I think it's sort of twofold as far as what they're about. One is to get you excited about going to do, you know, keep up your photography and always have something to do so that you don't ever stop photographing. And I guess two, it gives you a sort of motivation. I don't know. It just kind of, it makes you work towards something. And I think that's important, and have a goal. Like in my street photography classes, especially the collective, their goal every 6 months is to update a book, update a slideshow with music, you know, so that they're constantly keeping up with their newest, because we shoot a lot. So you just let that sit around, then you can get, you know, overwhelmed with trying to put something together. So the idea is to keep up with it all the time, month after month after month. So by the end of the 6 months, they've got their best stuff. And then the end of this next 6 months, it's easier because you take out some stuff, put new stuff in, you know. So we just finished that. We just finished our latest 6 months recently. And so everybody came with their final projects, and now we'll start again. And then we'll probably have a book at the end of the either Pico Boulevard or Wilshire. Maybe we'll do Pico next semester and then Wilshire the next semester or something.
Yeah. Like
so when they're responsible for updating a book and a slideshow, is that their own or is that a group project?
Well, so far it's just been their own. I would love to do a group project because I think probably when we do the Wilshire or Pico thing, that probably will be a group book. Because it's a, you know, it is kind of a group project in a way. But all of our street photography thus far has just been our own individual. Even though we go out together, we mostly don't shoot together. My Street One group, they like to shoot together because, you know, they're nervous. They've just gotten started on the streets. But the Street Collective group, they almost all of them like to shoot alone. So sure. So then we meet up in the beginning and we meet up at the end for coffee or a drink or something, and so that's always the fun camaraderie part of it. And then everybody loves the critiques because they like each other's, they like the opinions from others. So that helps too. We constantly critique their latest work. So then there's no reason why they shouldn't be caught up. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. I feel like with the critique and with the project, you're helping them to have a secondary skill, which is so important, which is curating your own work. Being able to put together a project, that's tough to do. And there's a lot of amazing photographers out there that lack that skill. So that's, I feel like your collective really helps hone that skill.
Well, one of the things I also do for the collective, there's quite a few perks for the collective group. And one of them is I bring in a couple of guests each semester and to help us with one thing or another, or to inspire us. But you guys know who Ibarian X Perello is. He's our dear friend. And he's really good at teaching how to sequence photos for books. Mm. And so I had him come in mid-semester so and it really helped everybody. So that kind of thing, we've always got people helping us do things. And so that's very helpful when we have outside folks come in to help us.
When you have them create a book, and then create a slideshow, do you give them guidelines on how many photos, you know, what kind of constraints do they have so that they're not putting hundreds and hundreds of photos in it? I mean, is there like hard and fast rules? It can't be more than 50?
Question. Yeah, no, they can bring five photographs to class per shoot. So if the way I've structured this, these groups, this collective in the street and on the streets in LA class, is that there are 6-month classes that meet once a month on a Monday for a critique and a lecture. That's for on the streets. There's no lecture most of the time in a collective group. It's just critique. But then once a month on Saturday for a shoot. Now, the reason I do it the way I do it is because then I'm hoping that they're going out a lot more over the months on their own. And I also offer about twice as many shoots as what's on the schedule for free. So there's always extra times to go shoot. So the more they shoot, the more they get to show, because they get to show 5 pictures per shoot.
Mm.
So you know, there's always a couple people in my class, or my group, I should say, in the collective group that has a lot of pictures to look at, because they've been out a lot. They're really good photographers too because of it.
You really have, I mean, everybody wants to go to New York to shoot street photography, and there's obviously lots of really good street photographers in New York, but L.A. is no slouch. I've met so many really good photographers from there, and they don't, you have a relatively small geographical area to shoot, unless you like strip malls and...
Right, yeah. True.
So,
Rodeo Drive.
Yeah, you know, Hollywood Boulevard. But, I've just met so many. Matter of fact, I met a guy the other day who teaches a class for you, who teaches your iPhone class, David Ingram.
Oh my goodness, I love his work so much.
Oh, me too. I bought his book.
Yes.
We're featuring him. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're featuring him in January.
Very good.
Just does amazing work with the phone, and very unique.
I always tell him I would like to wallpaper my house with his photographs.
Yeah.
They're so beautiful. They really are beautiful. He is the reason I changed my tune about iPhone photography, because I was kind of an old school girl. I mean, I used an 8x10 camera, Bernice Abbott's, you know. I mean, it's like I wasn't into the iPhone, but then when I saw his photographs, I went, look, I don't care how anybody gets photos. With an iPhone or a regular camera, if they're going to produce them like this, you know. So now I'm all hip on iPhones. I don't use one, but for a camera. But I love David's work, that's for sure.
Yeah, he inspired me to do more with my phone.
He teaches a 1-day class for us.
Yeah.
Once in a while.
Yeah, I see. There's one in December. Your iPhone and Android.
Is that coming up in December? I could take it myself just because I don't know anything about the iPhone camera.
Yeah, he knows some neat tricks.
Yeah, he does everything right in the phone.
Yeah, everything. Edits and everything.
I know. He must have a bigger phone than me. I have a little one of those little tiny iPhones, those old ones.
No, he uses, I think he has an iPhone 8, which is just, you know, one of the regular size ones before they started getting bigger, whatever the size of the 6 and the 7 was. He must have good eyes. I think it's hard to see him added on those little screens.
He's still young.
That's right. That's right. So what's coming up? What can people look forward to at LACP in the next 6 months?
Well, we've got the most exciting thing as far as street photography goes is that we have Street Week in LA coming up in February. And we have it it's every February. It's been, I think we've had it, guys, I think this might be either the fourth or the fifth annual. It keeps getting bigger every year. The first year it just was a 1-day thing with speakers and a 1-day workshop. Now we call it Street Week because it's a whole week. And we do a variety of things. So it'll, I think I have to look at the calendar, but it's February. It's the Monday after Super Bowl. We learned our lesson. Don't have,
good call.
Don't have Street Week on Super Bowl, right? So it's the third Monday is the third. It's the February 3rd through Sunday, the 9th. And so basically what happens is that we have, I'm going to be teaching a 5-day street photography workshop. We will also have that same Monday through Friday that I'm teaching. We will also have 5 different people teaching half-day street photography workshops. Then we'll also have some sort of big name street photographer who we hope will also be the juror of our street photography exhibit. He or she will come in and teach a weekend workshop. And then we'll also have like a one full long day of speakers. And that's always fun because everybody stays all day long and there's lots of time in between to socialize and talk with each other. And it's really fun. So that is not in place yet, all of the stuff, but it will be soon. And then I'll let you guys know about that.
Yeah, yeah. That's still a ways off. You're 6 months away from it, 7 months away. So long way. Yeah, wasn't Nick Turpin your...
And Nick was our last. Yeah, we've had Matt Stewart and Nick Turpin, Craig Sametko, who does work for Leica. Trying to think who else we've had. We've had lots of neat people. And so we have an exhibit that's called Street Photography Around the World, and so it's everybody just sends work in from all around the world.
Do you have a lot of people coming from out of town for this event, or is it mainly locals?
I think people are starting to. Like some of my students from the May workshop in New York, they all expressed interest in wanting to come to L.A. I don't think too many people outside L.A. know much about it. I know people from San Francisco, and I know people from California have come for it. But I think probably the more it gets known, I suppose more people will fly in for it, especially because now we're doing this year we're doing way more than I should say 2020, we're doing more than we've ever done. It's offering more than ever. So I think we'll probably have some people come from afar.
I think so for sure. You guys have some big name photographers and exciting events to just be there for. And hey, who doesn't want to go to LA for a week and do some street photography and hang out with photographers?
Especially in February.
And also, it will be at our new facility, which will I believe will be at our new facility by then. You ask what's exciting.
Oh, congratulations.
That's big.
6 months. Well, this is huge because we have now been around for 20 years and we basically sort of struggled by, most of the years. And amazingly stayed in business. And going nonprofit was a real smart move for us because we've been able to have so much support from board of directors and people who help us. And it's just been wonderful. And we had a big fundraiser in April, and we honored entertainment photographer Art Streiber, who's very beloved in town here and, all over the country, but he's a great photographer and he knows everybody and he helped us every step of the way and he helped us raise a lot of money, which allows us, we were so happily surprised, and it allows us to make the move we've been wanting to move. We're in a wonderful location right now in Hollywood, which is about 3,400 square feet, but the place that we think we're about to move into is about 7,000 square feet. And it could be as soon as October. Nobody knows.
Wow.
You guys are the first ones I'm telling this to, but it's okay to talk about it. It's very, very exciting. And so the Street Week in LA will be one of the first, I guess, probably big events that happen there.
So that is so exciting.
Yes, yeah. It really is. We've moved, we've had four locations in the 20 years. And this one obviously will be our biggest move.
Can you tell us what part of town it's in, or you'd rather?
I can't yet.
Okay.
Top secret, Bob,
yeah,
please.
Once we sign the lease, I'll tell you.
Yeah, let us know. We can do a little blog post and say, hey, congratulations. Now they got tons of space. And I'm sure you guys will be doing more classes and workshops and things then, huh?
Well, we'll have a lot more room for events and studio because a lot of times we've got space for studio at our place now, but not a big studio. So oftentimes, like if we have a big studio lighting class, we have to rent a studio. We won't have to anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and our event space is only at LACP now only holds about 60 people. The new one will hold about 200 or more, I think.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, that kind of thing. And we'll still have the same amount of classrooms. We always have three classrooms, two classrooms and a digital lab. But the new thing that I can't wait for, because it's been 7 years since I've printed, is A Dark Room.
Yeah.
We will have a real dark room. I'm so excited.
Yeah, that is big news. Man, so you must work a lot.
Yes, well, my joke is, the first 10 years, I worked 100 hours a week. The second 10 years, I worked about 80 hours a week.
Oh, okay. Now you're getting a break. That's good.
Oh. Yeah, so it's you're getting a little break. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I mean, I want to make things happen. That's why I keep working. Because I love it.
So of all the things you've done, what are you most proud of?
That's a great question. I have to think about that one for a second. I'm very honored and proud to have spent 1 year with Bernice Abbott. I think that it gave me so much confidence that something great had happened to me at such a young age. Mm. That I could go, I also gave me a great skill. I could print, you know, and then one thing led to another, and then I became a teacher. And that's the thing I'm probably the most proud of. I love sharing what I know, and I love being enthusiastic and inspiring people. I don't know that photography would have ever meant as much to me if I weren't a teacher on top of it. Mm. And vice versa, the two things come hand in hand. I really, sometimes people have said to me, do you ever resent that you have to teach so much that you don't get to do your own work? And I went, teaching is my own work. Mm. You know, it is. It's all part of my work is teaching and photography. And luckily, 13 years ago, I hired Brandon Gannon. I didn't know that he was going to be the person that he has become to me, but I am really happy. I make jokes now that it's the smartest, single smartest business move I ever made was to hire Brandon. And then the second smartest move was to hand off the day-to-day business to him, because I am not a business person. And it's amazing that the reason it survived is because I worked 100 hours a week, but I don't have a degree in business, you know, and Brandon does. He's not a photographer. That's the good thing. And that's the smart move I made, is to hire somebody who isn't a photographer, who wants to leave me to become a photographer. Right.
Yeah.
I don't have to run the day-to-day business, and I haven't had to for quite some time. And so that's good, because that's not something I like doing. I mean, I love the business, and I love being a part of all of it, but I love being a teacher more.
Yeah, it's so important to know your strengths and know where you need help and adjust accordingly.
Yep. Yes.
And many people don't do that. They try to do it all themselves, or they try to spend too much time doing things that are painful or
right.
Suck the energy from you.
Well, that certainly happened to me. But then you learn your lesson, because you just can't do it all. I mean, we have a wonderful work study team of 40 people. They get paid in trade. You know, they get paid per hour in trade, and so they get to take classes and use our studio and our dark room and our digital dark room and everything that we have. You know, they can use in trade. And but years ago, in the very beginning of time, when I thought I was going to jump off the highest roof, because I couldn't keep up with it all. And I just put an email out. I need help. and I'll be darned if 40 people step forward and our work study team was born. So that's all you have to do, I guess, is ask. And we got so much help. So that was great. And, you know, there for a while, it was only three of us. It was me and Brandon and one part-time person. And because of this successful fundraiser we just had, we were able to hire another part-time person. So now we have what I call two and three halves. We have There's two and three halves of us. There's three part-time people, one marketing director, one person who runs the work study team and all our classes, and then another person who's our office manager. That's the one we just hired. So we're all so happy. Brandon and I are so happy to have three more people helping us out. We did it alone for a while, so it's a lot better now. Easier.
It's pretty amazing you do all this with, what, several half of people.
Yeah, right. Well, luckily, like I say, we have this work-study team, or we wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, what a great idea. Well, Julia, it's been a pleasure to have you on with us today. Before we go, please tell us where people can find out more about you personally, as well as LACP.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been so much fun. My website is juliadean.com. The Los Angeles Center of Photography is lacphoto.org. And we are in Los Angeles, in Hollywood right now, for a few more months before we move to our new space. And our phone number there is 323-464-0909. I hope that you'll come see it.
And I'm going to add one more. Your street photography collective.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
LAStreetCollective.com.
Yeah, don't miss that. Definitely don't miss that.
That's important.
Fabulous, all of it. All right, well, Julia, thanks again. Appreciate the time. I know you're really busy.
My pleasure.
We look forward to seeing more of what you're doing.
Thank you so much, and thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.